So life is interesting, and yes, events can be embarrassing. Several people have taken delight this week in pointing out to me that the main text for my homily last Sunday was taken from the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, "Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink." And I refuse to take responsibility for this. Did I mention what I said to the first service? Now I don't remember. Did I mention about climate and weather?
Yes.
Well, some of you say, yeah, see, that just shows. It's like, it's the same thing like has been on my evaluations for years here. One half of the people responding say, "Mark, why do you never talk about God?" And the other half, of course, say, "Mark, why do you talk about God all the time?" And in this case, half the congregation says, "Yes, Mark, you talked about climate and weather," and half says, "No." So put on your listening ears now. Okay. When others observe you noticing yourself with regret. I love that title. It's not mine. It's Mary Lamia. She's a PhD in psychology. Not all psychologists are so poetic. When others observe you noticing yourself with regret. What she says is that embarrassment is one of the self-conscious emotions. We do something. We don't mean to do it. It's an accident. And we find ourselves violating some sort of social standard, or we find ourselves treading upon the good feelings that other people have about us. For example, in the middle of an important presentation, you accidentally but loudly burp. Now, it is a very human reaction. We all have done it. But there are moments when doing it finds us exposed to perhaps the laughter of others and embarrassment. Why we're embarrassed about our human condition? Well, there are times where we want to push that human condition off to the side and be proficient and competent and professional. So embarrassment usually results from accidents, even when we don't mean to violate some sort of social standard. So why are we embarrassed? Well, have you ever tripped and had a fall? And you find yourself jumping up, even if you're hurting badly? Ow! No, I'm fine. No problem. It's like you want to eradicate that moment, but everybody trips and falls, metaphorically and in reality. And we can't seem to let go of those moments. For example, I can't seem to let go of the moments when I fall asleep when we have company visiting. And poor Vicky has been mortified on more than one occasion where, in the middle of a lively conversation, sometimes being carried out by yours truly, I nod off, leading her to believe that I'm one of the few people on the planet who can fall asleep while talking to other people. And do we have anyone here who knows Spanish at all? Could you translate for me our centering thought this morning? Yes. Could you go to the store, a la tienda, para comprar unos groserios? Okay. Any of you who know Spanish know that there's no such word as groserios. So it's one of those things we do when we don't have the word and we think, you know, I'm going to try to stretch. I'm going to go from English to Spanish and maybe it'll work. The problem is that there is a word in Spanish that is grosero. It's an adjective. It means crude, rude, or foul-mouthed. So when I asked my friend to go to the store to get groserios, the only thing that he could have thought was that I was asking him to buy, dirty words or bad thoughts, or no wonder he looked at me in amazement. So I did ask people to email me some of their most embarrassing moments, promising confidentiality. Most of my embarrassing moments have to do with wardrobe malfunctions, Mark. From the time I was 7 and absent-minded, when I went to the board in class with a comb stuck in the back of my head, and all the kids laughed. As an adult, I've taught class unaware of a huge rip in the back of my dress. I've also gone out in public unaware that my skirt was hiked up in back, not indecent, but very funny looking. I've had kind souls in church pull it down for me. Just recently, it happened at a family barbecue, and a family friend clued me in. My favorite memory about all this was when my son was about 10 and stopped me from going outside with my dress hiked up by saying, "Mom, Mom, wait, your butt's even bigger than usual." And then there is the member of our church community, well known to all of us, who at the time, wearing a miniskirt, the fashion of the day, accidentally slipped. She doesn't remember whether it was on ice or snow or rain, but she slipped and the dress went up. And as she said, "I flashed my entire class." Yes, we have those embarrassing moments. Then the same person seemed to confuse dishwasher liquid with dishwashing liquid. She had never believed that you could actually find liquid that went in your dishwasher, but misreading the label, she poured it into her dishwasher, entertaining her in-laws, who were very important people to her, and she wanted to impress them. Half an hour later, when the dishwasher suddenly erupted with foam, sending it all over the floor, it might not have worked as well as she hoped. One of us wrote, "My embarrassing moment is from when I was in the Navy. I had just joined the ship and was on quarterdeck watch. I'd been told to check the IDs of anyone trying to come on board I did not recognize. So the ship's executive officer comes on board with someone this individual does not recognize. So he says to the executive officer, 'I recognize you, but I'd like to see some ID from the gentleman accompanying him.' The other guy smiles and gives me his ID. Then the executive officer gestures to the other guy and said that he would like to then introduce me to my commanding officer. Oh. Sort of made my reputation on the ship for displaying good initiative but bad judgment. And I received another email from a church member. It happened at a back-to-school evening held in the gymnasium. My student teacher was answering questions from the parents, and I was off to the side observing. I'd been sitting for some time, and it was after dinner, so I unbuttoned the top button on my silk trousers. After all, no one would notice, as it was under my jacket. However, when the father of one of my students came over to speak to me, I made the mistake of standing up to greet him. And when I did, my silk trousers slid right to the floor. He looked at me and said, "I'll come back later." I quickly rebuttoned myself, and sure enough, a bit later, the brave man did return, but this time he brought his wife. When I was in grade school, another one of us wrote, we were playing baseball. I got a hit and went to first base. When the next person got a hit, I ran quickly to third base, utilizing the shortest and fastest distance between two points. Everyone laughed, and I was out, and they called me Shortcut Sally from then on. By the way, all names have been changed to protect the guilty. Dacher Keltner studies embarrassment, the moment he says when we might feel this is the worst moment of my life. What happens when we get embarrassed is very interesting because we are embarrassed for the faux pas, and then we are embarrassed about being embarrassed. If you've ever had that moment when you blush, it's the blush that adds to the embarrassment because we're signaling to everyone double jeopardy. Everyone has seen the blush as well as the initial incident. We are accused twice. But the same research says we should not worry so much. Keltner found that embarrassment indicates overall goodness of the person embarrassed. So when we witness you being embarrassed, ironically, we like you better, trust you more, and are more likely to cooperate with you. Why? Because if you're embarrassed, you're just like us. You're a human being. You make mistakes. You have faux pas. We've all done it. We all have our stories. So don't dread those moments of embarrassment. People like us better. It's odd. It's the opposite of what we believe. But embarrassment is ultimately, I say, a funny business. Eventually. Yes, there is that initial moment, especially in high school or middle school or college or graduate school or in your family life, everywhere. Embarrassing moments take their toll in that moment, but eventually they acquire the gloss of laughter. Over time, the moments recede into foibles and eccentricities, harmless accidents rather than deep shame or abiding guilt. Big deal. We know that being part of embarrassment is being part of being human. We're not perfect. And embarrassment helps save us from the worst of the seven deadly sins, hubris and pride. It's not that we seek out moments to humble us, of course. They arrive unbidden. So embarrassment arrives at our doorstep from many sources. Our own behavior, that of others near and dear. Sometimes from objects we would never have suspected of causing us trouble. From the environment, our environment. And yes, they can be humorous and also instructive. And in light of that, I've asked Vicki to share with us a brief essay that she constructed several years ago. Preparing for this service, I thought of that writing, and I asked her to share it, even though I've had to persuade her a little bit because she didn't want to be embarrassed, but I think it is a perfect way to bring this service to a conclusion. Vicki?
I hate dust. Actually, where are my glasses? The fact that it's the main character in one of my favorite jokes only serves to complicate matters. Here's how that tale goes. Kid, Mommy, is it true that God made people out of the dust of the earth? Mommy, yes, sweetie. And is it true that when we die, we turn into dust, like the preacher said at Grandpa's funeral? Yes, honey, that's right. Well, I think you better come quick, because there's somebody under the bed, and I don't know if they're coming or going. Now, I know what you're thinking. If just as the good book wants us to believe, dust is the element from which we are made, maybe I shouldn't worry so much about all those transient people who are hanging around my house. And of course, I know there's romance to be found when dancing under the magic of dust light. Wait a minute. I think that's starlight. Well, never mind. But then again, aren't stars just big clumps of celestial dust? Now, you can see how confusing this can all be. But what really gets to me is the dust lying around on my furniture, and my silk plants, and the floor, and sometimes even the cat. I mean, what's the point? As far as I can tell, dust doesn't do anything. I can't eat it. It doesn't do tricks like my friend's dog. And it never, ever adds to the decor in an attractively compelling way that makes home and garden TV producers want to feature me on shows like Antonio's Creative Ways with Household Dirt or Emily's 101 Uses for Family Room Dust. No, rather than making itself useful in any meaningful way, dust just lounges around the living room like some errant teenager who has lost internet connection for the afternoon. But what's even more troubling is that dust likes to travel in a crowd, and it is terribly demanding. How else can you explain those cryptic messages left on my piano? Dust me, the musical surface shouts. Yeah, I'll dust you. But I digress. For a long time, I was intimidated by dust, thinking I was destined to lose in some battle of self-esteem if I allowed it to survive. To make matters worse, it always felt like dust was taunting me with unsaid criticisms, luring me into thinking that no one with my level of education could possibly harbor so much worthless filth. So every Saturday, instead of playing with my kids or going to the park, I would get out the cloth, which dust somehow managed to very self-centeredly have named after itself, and I would spend hours chasing my enemy from room to room. And if I was ever negligent in my household chores and skipped a week, well, dust just called in reinforcements to spite me. That meant that after any slack or break, I was forced to get out the big guns. Those were the days when I found myself wielding a wet sponge, engaged, as it were, in a kind of rock-scissor-paper challenge for the inanimate crowd. And I'm pleased to say, frequently, I won. Yet any victory I had was short-lived. I mean, talk about a phoenix complex. No sooner does a new sun rise than dust feels the need to resurrect itself, nonchalantly acting as if it's a good friend who just momentarily had to leave the room and is now back, ready and willing to give me its full attention. This reappearing act always left me feeling defeated, until finally, with head hung low, one morning I simply got out of bed and mumbled in my still sleepy voice, "I don't care anymore. Coat whatever surfaces you want. You can fill whatever corners you desire, Mr. Dust. I've had it. Anything that is as persistent as you deserves to live. And if you want to do it in my house, by all means, be my guest. I don't even care if you and the missus want to mate under the bed and raise little dust bunnies of your own." Instead of sounding resigned, I thought maybe I was being brave. But by 10 o'clock, I'd already run the Swiffer twice because, well, you know, some habits are hard to break. Yet no matter what I said or did, I found it difficult to escape the flagrantly unattractive behavior Dust exhibited, and which I knew in my heart of hearts, one day I would have to address head on. At first, I wasn't sure how to take on such a big challenge. But the saying, "be the change you want to see," kept popping into my head, making me think I was probably the one who was going to have a better attitude if I wanted anything to be different. So instead of trying to rid my days of all the dust in my life, I decided to tackle the harder project of transforming myself. This eventually led to another early morning conversation, and it went something like this. "Did you know, Mr. Dust, to scientifically test your importance, I recently ran a little experiment. For a whole week, I didn't pay any attention to you. Then I let a month go by. And you know what? That sky filled with all those dusty stars didn't fall. One night, I even let you hang out while company came over for dinner. Then I held an adult enrichment class in your presence, which in some ways seemed almost blasphemous. But what the hell? I did it because I thought I heard a voice greater than mine telling me there can be honor in letting go of what annoys us." Dust, as usual, didn't respond in any civilized way. It just sulked belligerently while hiding between the books in the bookcase. Still, even this sly kind of dirty behavior didn't stop time from passing. Dinner parties came and went, and no one died. Committee meetings were held, and we accomplished just as much in the company of dust as we had when it was gone. Finally, after years of endlessly battling my household nemesis, Dust and I became friends of a different sort. In fact, I expect to see a lot more of Dust in the future. And just in case I haven't made the lesson I learned clear, let me write it out for you on the coffee table. The worth of who I am is not defined by how clean my house is, or how many things I own, or how embarrassed I am that I can't make everything in the world perfect, including myself, but rather by the caring attention I extend to people. The days when I look my friends straight in the eye and say, "Here, let me move this stack of old newspapers and magazines out of the way so you can sit down. I have time for you, and I want to know what's happening in your life." And while I can't swear that what I'm about to say is true, every time I have a conversation similar to that last one, I think I can hear an approving chuckle coming from somewhere under the bed.
Today I've chosen words by someone no longer living, but someone whose name you recognize very well. Steve Jobs. And before he died, he said these things. "Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important." The reason that we gather here and in places like this, Sundays and Friday nights, is to determine finally those things that are truly important. Go in peace and love. Amen.